With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour. Coming up, we'll be looking back at last night's Europa League action. Wins for Wolves, Manchester United, Arsenal and Celtic. It means, for the first time ever, 7 teams from one country have won all 7 games in a week of European football. So a good week for the English sides. We'll also be looking ahead to the Premier League action, previewing all the games, talking in particular about Brighton and doing our Premier League predictions right towards the end of the hour. If you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 70 20 558. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon as we look back at the European football from this week and also look ahead to the Premier League action that gets underway tonight on the South Coast at St Mary's Stadium. It is Southampton versus Leicester, an 8 o'clock kickoff tonight. So let's look back at last night's Europa League action. 5 British sides in action, 3 early games. Wolves, who went 1-0 down early doors away at Slovan Bratislava, came back to win 2-1. Goals from Romain Saiss and Raul Jimenez gave Wolves all 3 points in that game. Back-to-back away wins for Wolves in the Europa League after a tough start at home against Braga. And they've bounced back with 2 away victories against Beşiktaş and Slovan Bratislava. Over in Belgrade, Manchester United made the trip out there, and a Anthony Martial penalty towards the end of the first half gave them all 3 points. It finished Partizan Belgrade 0, Manchester United 1. And the final early kickoff was in Portugal at the Estádio do Dragão, where Porto took on Rangers. Considering Porto have got to the Champions League knockout stages in the last 2 seasons, it looked like a tough game for Rangers, but they managed to get a 1-1 draw. Alfredo Morelos with the goal for Rangers that secured a point, and a very good one for Steven Gerrard's side out in Portugal. Then to the 2 8 o'clock kickoffs at the Emirates. Arsenal were down. They looked like they might lose against Vitória Guimarães, but 2 Nicolas Pepe free kicks towards the end of the game secured all 3 points for Arsenal, as they had to come from behind and bring some players off the bench to make an impact in that game to make it 3 wins from 3 in the group for Arsenal. And then at Celtic Park, Celtic had to come from 1-0 down as well against Lazio. They won 2-1 there. As I mentioned, England are the first nation in Champions League and Europa League history to have a 100% record from 7 teams in the same week. Obviously, on Tuesday it started with Manchester City winning 5-1 against Atalanta, Tottenham winning 5-0 against Red Star Belgrade. On Wednesday night in the Champions League, Chelsea won 1-0 away at Ajax, Liverpool won 4-1 away at Genk, and then last night, Arsenal winning 3-2, Manchester United winning 1-0, and Wolves winning 2-1. So a pretty good week for the English side. A 100% record from the 7 teams in the same week. England becoming the first nation to do so in the Champions League and the Europa League. So a pretty good week for all of the English side. 7 wins out of 7. A 100% record. And for most of those teams, it's looking pretty good to qualify for the knockout stages halfway through the group stages. We're going to be hearing a little bit about Manchester United's win last night over in Belgrade. But firstly, let's talk a little bit about Arsenal's win. As I mentioned, 2 pretty good free kicks from Nicolas Pepe secured all 3 points as they came from behind to beat Vitória Guimarães. I think it was a worrying kind of 60-70 minutes for Arsenal, as you're thinking they're going to lose to Guimarães, which would have been a massive embarrassment, a massive shock for them. Pepe, who'd only scored 1 goal so far this season since his £72 million move from Lille. His only other goal had come from the penalty spot, but came up with two pretty good strikes from free kicks just outside the penalty area to lead a comeback for Arsenal. Obviously, quite a young side, and a lot of the back four that I think Arsenal fans are very keen to see in the Premier League, with the likes of Kieran Tierney, Rob Holding, and Héctor Bellerin. They were playing last night for Arsenal. They had to come back from behind, and they'd obviously beaten Eintracht Frankfurt 3-0 in their opening game away from home, then had beaten Standard Liège. They then had to come back from behind last night to win that game against Vitória Guimarães that leads them to three wins out of three for Arsenal. They're on to 9 points out of a possible 9 points. So things are looking good for Arsenal to qualify. Obviously, they should be qualifying very easily from this group, but they put themselves in a good position three games in and still three more to come, and you're already on 9 points. You're virtually qualified already with 9 points. It's very rare that teams that get that many points don't go on to qualify for the knockout stages. So I'd say a decent night. The result, obviously, in the end for Arsenal was decent, but worrying times for the Gunners, as it looked like at one point like they might lose. They went behind twice in the game to Guimarães, so a few concerning things for Arsenal fans defensively. But Nicolas Pepe did react with a couple of goals, two good free kicks late on for Arsenal to give them all 3 points. On the breakfast show this morning, Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's were joined by Simon Collins, a sports reporter for the Evening Standard. They were talking about that Arsenal game, as well as talking about the performances of Nicolas Pepe and also Matteo Guendouzi. He was asked first, though, about what his views on Arsenal's performance last night.
I think it's perhaps one of the worst Arsenal performances we've seen this season. In reality, I mean, the first half was so lackluster, ponderous, poor in possession, and very, out of kilter for what Arsenal have been in the Europa League. I mean, Emery, in his press conference before, said, we need to recreate our Europa League performances in the Premier League. And in reality, they didn't deliver at all. And the fact they had to make two changes at half-time, and they were left in the end for Nicolas Pepe to bail them out, perhaps says it all against a Vitória team who had injuries, were resting players for their game at the weekend. And they made very hard work of it, Arsenal.
Yeah, so I've stumbled into an Arsenal fans WhatsApp group, which as a United fan is a rather dangerous place to be, I must say. But I'm just going to read some of the message out from last night. Robbery. We're papering over the cracks. We're rubbish as a team. This, that, and the other. This just seemed to be Unai out as well. There's another one. I thought that was probably a bit much. But that just seems to be the mood of the Arsenal fans at the minute. Are they being a little bit unfair? Is it that bad at Arsenal at the moment, do you think?
I mean, it's a difficult one. The mood sort of feels like it's teetering on the edge of, there's a discontent among the Arsenal fans, and they're sort of waiting for a result to justify the knives coming out and sticking them in. And, defeat last night would have definitely been that. We saw there was the odd banner in the crowd, admittedly, with a crayon and A4. It's perhaps not the most, imposing. But there was a few banners there. And I think the frustration with the fans is, obviously, the results, they've lost twice this season, so you can't have many grievances with that. But it's the manner of the performances. And again, last night, we saw what we've seen this season, where they're just lacking, control in matches. You look at Manchester City, you look at Liverpool, even Chelsea to a degree are getting it. Those big teams, they control games, they dictate the tempo. And for Arsenal, it's like watching a basketball match where it's end-to-end. You don't really know who's going to be in possession, who's going to control the game. And I think that's the frustration for fans, that they're not really seeing what they would have expected to see when Unai Emery's had over a year in the job. So he is under pressure, I think, but last night would have slightly eased that by getting the 3 points that everyone expected them to get.
Yeah, a couple of individuals I want to speak to you about. One is Pepe, of course, who got the two goals yesterday. Another one is Mesut Ozil. We'll touch on him first. I saw an interesting tweet from Sam Dean saying Arsenal have paid Mesut Ozil £3.7 million since the first day of the Premier League season. He's played 142 wow. minutes of football in that time, which works out at around £26,000 per minute of football. He wasn't involved last night. What was going on with Ozil?
Well, it's turning into a bit of a sort of PR war, as you were saying, Ozil's tweet, slightly before the match. I mean, it feels now as perhaps as big a stalemate as we've had during the Mesut Ozil career. I mean, he obviously gave that big interview during the international break, basically saying, you know, putting the ball in Arsenal's court and explaining, I've got a contract till June 2021. I'm going to be staying here. I want to get back in the team. And I think Arsenal fans knew he probably wasn't going to play against Sheffield United on Monday night. Emery hasn't really wanted him in his Premier League team. Away from home at Sheffield isn't the sort of game you're going to play Mesut Ozil. But when you've got a team in the Europa League who are bottom of the Europa League group, they haven't won a single point in the whole competition. They haven't won away from Europe in 14 years. You would think if Emery's going to bring in Ozil, that this is the game to do it. Even just put him on the bench, but to completely leave him out of the squad, I think sends a clear, clear message. And Emery will argue, you know, he's looking long-term. He wants to give someone like Smith Rowe a game, youngsters at the club. But it's a situation that needs resolving, because you cannot have a person on £350,000 a week simply not playing. It's, as Sam mentioned in his tweet there, just from a monetary point of view, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Obviously, a positive last night was Pepe, the two free kicks. I mean, I've been quite critical of him on this show. I haven't really seen what it is that Arsenal have seen. Of course, he did very well last season. I appreciate that. But it doesn't seem to have happened for him to this point. Will last night be the boost that he needs to maybe allow him to kick on?
Yeah, I think last night was really, really huge for him. I think Pepe, it's a difficult one because, you know, this is a guy who's never played, you know, away from France. He's learning the language. He's still just about understanding English. He can't really speak it. He completely missed the pre-season because he was at the Africa Cup of Nations. He arrived. So I think Emery, to be fair, has stressed it was always going to take time for him to come good. And admittedly, I was in the same camp as you until sort of this week. I hadn't really seen what the fuss was about. But at Sheffield on Monday, I know he missed that very good chance. But there were moments where you saw him beating a man. You saw that flash of brilliance and you thought, hang on, you know, there's a player here. And then Juli last night, as soon as he scored that first free kick, you saw his shoulders almost, you know, expand out, his chest puffed out. And when they got that free kick in the last minute, you know, Ceballos was running over to have a look at it. Other players were there. But Pepe instantly, like any big player, was like, no, give me the ball. I'm going to stand up and be the man to deliver. And he duly did it. So it feels like, for him, that could be a night we look back on and go, yeah, that's when Nicolas Pepe really arrived in England.
A quick word on Guendouzi as well. Another positive, it has to be said, and certainly a positive this season. Of course, won the free kick with the drive and run that Arsenal scored from. What's your take on him so far?
Yeah, I mean, for me, he's been Arsenal's best player this season, perhaps only just beaten by Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. In that midfield, when he's not on the pitch, they just seem to lack that sort of drive, that enthusiasm, that willingness to get on the ball. And that, for me, with Guendouzi is the big thing about him. He will constantly, you know, demand the ball. He will never hide. And last night, as you say, when they were absolutely on the ropes there towards the end, desperately trying to get it, he goes back, he wins the ball, he drives forward, he wins the free kick and Arsenal score from it. And he, at the moment, is the one who's sort of keeping that midfield together, because when he's not there, they don't really seem to have any sort of drive or go forward in it. So he's suddenly become, you know, one of Arsenal's most important players. And, you know, only a year ago, everyone was saying, who's this kid that Arsenal signed from the French second division? And now he's perhaps one of the key players in that team and someone Emery really can't afford to have injured or not in the side.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be reacting a little bit, or hearing a little bit, from Manchester United after their 1-0 win in Belgrade last night. Quite fortunate with the number of chances Partizan Belgrade had last night. Before we do that, let's have a quick rundown of some of the Premier League fixtures to look forward to this weekend. Obviously, my favourite part of the week is the Premier League predictions section at 1:45. But here we go. Here, previewing all the Premier League games this weekend. Tonight, it all kicks off down at St Mary's Stadium. Southampton host Leicester at 8 o'clock. It's been a bit of an indifferent start for Ralf Hasenhüttl's men, whereas for Leicester, it's been a very convincing start, up in the top four at the moment and playing some good football. And you'd probably back Leicester to win that one. Then on to Saturday afternoon, and the early kickoff, 12:30, is up at the Etihad. It is Manchester City up against Aston Villa, who are in decent form themselves, but this is going to be probably a test too far. Maybe it's being a little bit disrespectful to Aston Villa, but It seems like it's a question of how many for Manchester City tomorrow. But if Villa can frustrate City, obviously without a number of defenders, dealt another blow today after Oleksandr Zinchenko has undergone knee surgery, adding to Manchester City's defensive woes. So you'd imagine it will be an easy win for Manchester City. But as we come to expect in the Premier League, expect the unexpected. Then to some of the 3 o'clock kickoffs at the Amex Stadium. It is Brighton versus Everton. Brighton have lost the most games in the Premier League in 2019. They've lost 15 in total in the league. But they did win in this fixture last season by 1-0. So Graham Potter will be hoping his side can turn up at home, and Everton have a pretty woeful away record. Then at Vicarage Road, it's Watford v Bournemouth. Watford still on the trail for their first 3 points of the season. They should have got it away at Tottenham last weekend, but they were cruelly denied by a couple of poor decisions that VAR did not overturn. Bournemouth looking to get all 3 points there at a struggling Watford, not just in terms of their league place, but also their confidence. Danny Welbeck has been ruled out for a number of months with yet another injury. West Ham take on Sheffield United at the London Stadium. Sheffield United actually have a pretty good away record in the Premier League this season, and they'll be buoyed by their 1-0 home win against Arsenal on Monday night. West Ham have had a couple of disappointing results just before the international break, losing 2-1 at home against Crystal Palace, and then just after the international break, losing 2-0 away at Everton. Then the final game on Saturday looks like a tough task for Frank Lampard's Chelsea. They obviously got a terrific result on Wednesday night away at Ajax by 1-0. They travel to Turf Moor. It's a 5:30 kickoff. Burnley against Chelsea. Looks like a really tough task for Chelsea. Sean Dyche is hoping that Ashley Barnes will be back from injury. He missed out on the game against Leicester, looking to reunite the Barnes-Wood partnership. We had Natalie Bromley from the No Nay Never podcast yesterday, and she was saying how the Barnes-Wood partnership up front is so key to the formation that Sean Dyche goes with. Then we have four games on Sunday. 1 2 o'clock kickoff. Seems strange why there are 3 4:30 kickoffs, but don't get me started on Premier League scheduling. It's at St James's Park. No, not the proper one down at Exeter. It is the one up in Newcastle. They take on Wolves, who obviously were involved in Europa League action last night, winning 2-1 at Slovan Bratislava. Newcastle's problem has been goals. No one scored more than one goal for Newcastle this season, so they need to kick into gear. Then 4:30 kickoffs. We have three of them on Sunday afternoon. Arsenal at home against Crystal Palace. Arsenal, as we mentioned, won 3-2 against Vitória Guimarães. Not a good performance at all. Arsenal were pretty poor. But the result, I suppose, we are in a results-driven business in football, and that is the most important thing. They host Crystal Palace, who've actually had a pretty decent 2019. Not many sides have taken more points in this calendar year in the Premier League than Crystal Palace. I think it's only Manchester City and Liverpool that have taken more points in this calendar year. Leicester also probably up there with the most number of points in this year. The big game of the weekend is most certainly at Anfield on Sunday afternoon. It's Liverpool versus Tottenham. Liverpool and Tottenham both winning in the Champions League convincingly this week. So a pretty big matchup up at Anfield. Jurgen Klopp has been having his press conference confirm that Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joel Matip and Andrew Robertson should all be fit for Sunday's game for Tottenham. Perhaps a positive sign for them or for their fans is that there aren't many injuries. Hugo Lloris is the only confirmed man to be out of that game. The likes of Giovanni Lo Celso and Ryan Sessegnon, who they signed over the summer, should be back fit or in training. Lo Celso came off the bench in midweek and Sessegnon could still be, though, a few weeks away, but a decreasing injury list for Tottenham. And then the final game of the weekend is at Carrow Road. Norwich take on Manchester United. As we mentioned, United won in Belgrade last night by 1-0. Norwich they've had a very indifferent start to the season, very inconsistent for them. Obviously, they've had the real highs of beating Manchester City at home 3-2 in a fantastic occasion at Carrow Road, and then being battered 5-1 by another newly promoted side in the form of Aston Villa. So they need to get back to winning ways. They did secure their first clean sheet and their first point away from home last weekend away at Bournemouth. So they'll be hoping to get back to winning ways on Sunday afternoon. As I said, their opponents are Manchester United. And they obviously won last night in Belgrade, 1-0 against Partizan. And earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Love Sport's Northwest correspondent Mark Flanagan. And he started by talking about Manchester United's performance last night.
Well, I think it was a good character-building thing, really, for a lot of those players. Like you say, when you haven't won for so long, any win's a good one. And I think, obviously, it's easy to forget as well how good Partizan are at home. They've beaten better teams than United in Europe recently. I think it's 12 games without a defeat at home. And those trips into Eastern Europe are notoriously difficult, and obviously a poignant victory as well. In the Busby Babes' last appearance together was in that stadium all those years ago, and Partizan famously beat United in 66 in a semi-final. So there's a lot of history, and it would have meant a lot to Partizan, and you could see how fervent the crowd were. It was an extraordinary atmosphere, and some young kids for United rose to the occasion, notably obviously Brandon Williams, who obviously led by example and I think deservedly was identified as the man of the match by Ollie.
Yeah. Tony Marshall, he's all right, isn't he? He's back in action now. 4 goals in his last 5 games, actually. 3 himself, 1 assist as well. So he's been involved in 4 goals last 5 games, I should say. 3 goals himself, 1 assist. How important is it for United to have him back?
It's definitely huge. And Marshall, with the right attitude and fully fit, is critical, I think. Obviously, he is a really kind of standout attacker that they've got. It was interesting, actually, Ollie was very critical of the defending from the front. And I think that's the big worry about Marshall is the yards that he puts in the games, and they're doing the dirty work, which is critically important if you're a striker defending from the front. Obviously, that's something that I think he needs to work on. I think that's being kind to him. But I think it was interesting that Solskjaer pointed that out straight away in the press conference afterwards, that he wasn't happy with the way that his team defended from the front. And, obviously the second half developed, the pressure that grew on the goal was considerable, and United got away with it in many respects. But I guess with everything that's happened in recent weeks, you obviously take that and move forward. And they haven't conceded a goal in Europe. And if you don't concede, you've got a good chance of winning. So at least they've got that foundation, which appears to be sort of slowly being put into place.
Indeed. Brandon Williams, good signs for United's youth system. I know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said he was his man of the match yesterday.
Yeah, he really kind of rose to the occasion, didn't he? And obviously won the penalty as well, surging forward. He seems to have everything in his game. He looks good going forward. He looks strong, and obviously that strength of character as well, which you need when you're under the cosh, like the United were for so long during that game. I'm struggling to think of an occasion where he really, really kind of struggled. Good positionally, he gets forward as well, and looks good on the ball. He's quick enough. He's not lightning quick, but he's quick enough. So he's got all the components to make a top player. And I think critically as well, the attitude that Ollie kind of pointed towards, I think he mentioned the word attitude twice when he was talking about him after the game, and that's critical when you've obviously got a team that's struggling as well.
Yeah, and I just think as well, he's exactly Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's type of player. Born in Manchester, it says Brandon Paul Brian Williams. It doesn't get much more English than that, does it? Fantastic stuff. But he just kind of epitomises what Solskjaer wants to bring through, doesn't it? Exciting, young, homegrown talent. And do you think, given that we've seen enough now, I think, of Solskjaer's tenure at United, and it's fair to say it's been mixed at best, but do you think there are signs that actually, if they just persist with him, that this will come good in the end?
God, it's such a difficult question, isn't it? I think what they do over the next 3 or 4 weeks is massive with the in the Premier League, because obviously sometimes Europe can be somewhat of a distraction in terms of the overall picture, and you're never quite sure of the quality of the opposition. I just think that their inability to break down teams who they should beat is a huge worry, and he just doesn't seem to have a plan B going forward. And I think that's the kind of the $64,000 question is, can they go away to Norwich and Bournemouth? And if they can't break down that kind of wall of defence, can they find a way through? Or they just don't seem to have that kind of imagination and variation in the play, which is a massive worry, which you have to have, because teams at this level will find you out very quickly if your plan A doesn't work. And I think that's the big worry. I think the other big worry is his substitutions don't often seem to come off, and he doesn't seem to be able to sort of change it mid-flow, which all the really good managers have that kind of knack of just finding a way of altering the flow of a match, and Solskjaer hasn't demonstrated that yet.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. We're going to continue to look ahead to the Premier League action this weekend. Obviously, get us underway tonight down at St Mary's. Southampton take on Leicester. We're going to look ahead to one of the 3 o'clock kickoffs tomorrow down at the Amex Stadium. It's Brighton against Everton. And to get the Brighton perspective now, we can talk to Andy Naylor, Brighton reporter for The Athletic. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Andy. Last time out for Brighton, it was a 2-1 away loss at Aston Villa. A late goal, meaning Brighton didn't get a point. But ultimately, did the early sending off of Aaron Moy cost Brighton in that game?
It certainly did, yes. And the result kind of continued the narrative of the season so far, which has been good performances. The quality was there, not being matched by the final outcome. That was certainly the way it panned out at Villa Park. I'm convinced that if they'd kept 11 players on the pitch, Brighton would have won the game. Even without Moy, Villa really didn't look like scoring against 10 men. In fact, for much of the second half, Brighton looked the more dangerous team, and it was just a late goal deep into injury time. Again, a pattern. Red cards and late goals. They have plagued Brighton throughout their Premier League existence.
That's now the 15th Premier League game that Brighton have lost this year, and that's the most in the Premier League. Is that an alarming number of losses? That obviously teams lose games, and a lot of teams in the Premier League are quite inconsistent. But in terms of 15 losses, that must be quite alarming. I know Graham Potter obviously wasn't in charge last season because Chris Hughton was, but that's quite shocking for Brighton that they've lost that many games.
Yeah, when you just look at it in those sort of cold statistical terms, it is. But as you pointed out, obviously Graham Potter only took charge in the summer. And I think the feeling is that the results are coming. They obviously, in the last home game, I mean, played Spurs off the park, really, won 3-0. And they were hoping to build on that at Aston Villa. It didn't work out. They've got two chances now coming up at home, Everton and Norwich, before another tough little spell where they play Manchester United, and then after the next international break, it's Leicester, Liverpool and Arsenal. So these are two really important games in the context of where they might be sort of getting towards the halfway point of the season.
Why is it, do you think, Andy, that you are seeing such different performances from Brighton? Because you think back just a couple of weeks and Brighton won 3-0 at home against Tottenham and probably actually could have won even more emphatically than that. That's how well they played on that day. And then losing at Aston Villa, I know that the performance wasn't particularly bad, but why is it that we're seeing such different results from one week to the next for Brighton?
Well, I think you can explain the Villa result literally with the red card. I think for anyone who was at the game, they would have seen that the level of performance promised to build on what they'd achieved against Tottenham. They were playing well. They were deservedly 1-0 up before Moy was sent off. And it was only really the period between then and half-time when they looked wobbly with the 10 men and Villa got an equaliser. But again, in the second half, they played well with 10 men. They never really looked in trouble and looked a threat on the break. So I think you have to maintain the conviction that if they keep the level of performance and cut out, if you like, what you call silly mistakes. I mean, Moy's red card was very uncharacteristic. It's the first of his career in around 300 appearances, but you know, he got two bookings in quick succession, so you couldn't really see that coming. That whole thing about maintaining the concentration right to the end, they have had a habit of conceding late goals. It cost them against Burnley at home when they looked like winning 1-0 until Jeff Hendrick scored deep into injury time. So I think they're close to being a much better side than their position and their results reflect. But of course, it's about actually carrying those through and making sure they pick up the points.
I'm guessing, though, one positive for Brighton fans is seemingly the re-emergence of Pascal Gross, because last season he was in and out of the side. I know he had a few injuries here and there, but his performance massively dipped last season compared to the season before. But since the start of 2017-18, he's created a league-high 69 chances from set pieces. That must be one of the real positives for Brighton fans to take out of this season so far, is that even though the results haven't necessarily been potentially as good as they'd have hoped for, that the someone like Pascal Gross, who a couple of seasons ago was really good for Brighton, was really crucial, that he's starting to rediscover that form of 18 months ago, 2 years ago.
Yes, he is. And funny enough, I wrote a detailed piece about Pascal this week for The Athletic, making that very point. And what really happened with him last season was that he suffered a couple of long injuries last season, ankle ligament damage against Fulham quite early on. Then he hurt a hamstring at Leicester. So he had a really interrupted campaign last season. And his position had also changed. Chris Hughton had sort of gone to more of a 4-3-3. He tended to quite often play as a more orthodox midfielder, whereas in that first season, he was very much the number 10 link man behind Glenn Murray in a 4-4-1-1. His role has changed again under Graham Potter. Graham is tending now to use a sort of 4-2-2-2. Pascal has been on the right side of the two behind the strikers. And he's thriving again. He's created, he's third in the list of chances created behind only Kevin De Bruyne and Trent Alexander-Arnold. So he's really having an influence again, really coming to the fore. He's an intelligent player, probes well with his passing. The one thing that probably stops him being a real attraction for bigger clubs is a lack of pace. But he's certainly come into the fore again for Brighton, and I think that's going to be important for them.
Looking ahead then to tomorrow afternoon's game, it's a home game against Everton. Good bit of news for Brighton fans that Leandro Trossard is expected to be available for that game. Do you look at these games and think, I mean, it's maybe too early in the season to say it's a must-win game, but considering Everton's poor away form, this seems like quite an important game for Brighton to pick up all 3 points.
Yeah, I think it is. As you sort of indicated there, it's easy to get a bit too carried away, isn't it? We're not even 10 games in yet about sort of talking about must-wins. But as I indicated before, when you look at their run of fixtures coming up, these two do stand out, Everton followed by Norwich, as good opportunities in what is going to be after that a challenging period. They've got a pretty good record against Everton at home, beat them last season. Everton, of course, have just had a really bad run and then sort of got back on track against West Ham at Goodison last weekend. So be interesting to see, you know, have they caught them maybe at the wrong time, maybe the beginning of an Everton revival. But I think it is a significant fixture for Brighton, as is the Norwich one. Those 6 points, they really need to pick up 4 points at least, I would say, from the next two games at home to give themselves a bit of breathing space.
And just finally then, Andy, I'm sure you might say keeping 11 men on the pitch might be the answer to this, but if you had to pick up one key thing for Brighton tomorrow to pick up all 3 points, what would your advice be to this Brighton side?
Well, I suppose the other aspect is to actually make more of their play in the final third, both with the sort of final ball and also the chances when they come. You know, they've had a good share of possession in games. They've had a good number of chances in games without necessarily quite capitalising them. as often as they might. So that's the area when the chances come along. It'll be interesting again to see the side Graham put. I mean, I've given up trying to second guess his selections because it literally changes game to game and, of course, during games. So it'll be interesting to see where Trossard actually starts or is on the bench again tomorrow, who comes in for Moy, whether there were any other changes. But, yeah, whoever's involved, take the chances when they come. That's going to be key.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. That was Andy Naylor, a Brighton reporter for The Athletic, looking ahead to that game at the Amex tomorrow afternoon. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff. Brighton are at home against Everton. Everton's away form has been terrible, and I think Marco Silva should get the sack. I don't think he's a particularly good manager, and potentially that 2-0 win against West Ham last weekend has maybe given him a little bit more time. But as Andy was suggesting, the next two games, Everton and Norwich, absolutely crucial for Brighton at home to get as close to 6 points as possible for them. Just a couple of other bits to bring you, a couple of kind of amusing stories, and they're both in relation to Roma. Last night in the Europa League, Roma were 1-0 up at home going into the latter stage, into added time against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And a penalty was given to Mönchengladbach, which they converted. And the man to concede the penalty was Chris Smalling. But that doesn't tell you the whole story, because it was given a penalty for a handball. And as replay showed, it hit him right in the face. And yet it was given a handball. Now, ridiculously, VAR only comes in the Europa League in the final. And I don't really get that at all, because then you might have situations where teams that got knocked out quarterfinal, semi-final, might be saying, well, we feel hard done by because we didn't get the benefit of VAR earlier in the competition, but you might get the benefit of it in the final. But quite an amusing story there. And actually, this is an even better story. Is this the story of the century? Former England midfielder, I think that's a bit, that's too kind for Jack Rodwell to say that, but he's been capped 3 times by England. Jack Rodwell is in Italy, wait for it, over a potential move to Roma. No deal has been agreed, but supposedly he's on his way for a medical. He left Blackburn Rovers, a championship club, in the summer, and he is potentially going to join up with Roma. You could not write it. You leave a championship club in the summer on a free transfer because you're not good enough for a championship club and you're about to rock up for a team that plays in the Europa League. I mean, what I would say is that probably Jack Rodwell's agent should be in the Brexit negotiating team, because he certainly does a pretty good job if he can secure Jack Rodwell a move to Roma. Not confirmed yet, but potentially it's going to happen, which would be a pretty stunning signing in a negative sense, not in terms of an incredible coup for them. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next is the favourite part of the week. It's Premier League prediction time.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon as we look ahead to the Premier League action. And it is my favourite time of the week. We really do need to create a jingle for this. It is Premier League prediction time, my favourite part of the week. Maybe not Laurie's favourite part of the week. Or maybe he's enjoying it a little bit more now that he's not getting zero on a game week. I'm joined by producer Laurie in the studio. Is this a section that you really look forward to, or is it one that you massively dread?
I wouldn't say I dread it, because I don't think the stakes are as high as that. But, yeah, I won't deny that some weeks haven't gone particularly well. Last week wasn't great, to be fair.
A bit of an understatement to say some weeks haven't gone well. One week you did get zero, which I think is pretty difficult to get zero in one week. However, let's focus on this week. We've got quite a bit of time, so let's go through them all. Friday night, 8 o'clock off tonight. The Premier League weekend gets underway at St Mary's. Southampton versus Leicester. I think as I'm in the lead, I should probably start off. I don't see it being anything other than an away win tonight. So I'm going to go for Southampton 1, Leicester 2. I cannot see Southampton getting anything from the game. Laurie, what are you going to go for?
If it weren't at St Mary's and if it weren't a Friday night, I would probably go with you. But I just think they played a Friday night a few months ago, I think, or potentially they didn't. Bournemouth have also played a Friday night for sure.
Southampton lost on that game.
Yeah, I think 3-1. That's... Is that the game that I'm thinking of, Southampton-Bournemouth? Because it could have been 2-2 and it ended up being 3-1 right at the end, didn't it? So, but on that basis, I'm gonna say 2-2. I think they could just about get a result.
I think the neutrals would enjoy a 2-2 draw. This is the first time I've seen Charlie's. I didn't look at them deliberately just to wait and see our reactions. He has gone for the exact same score as you, Laurie. For once you agree, it's 2-2 according to Mr. Hawkins. So you finally agree on something. Then on to Saturday, 12:30 kickoff, the first kickoff. It is Manchester City up against Aston Villa. Charlie has gone Manchester City 3, Aston Villa 0. Laurie, what are you going to go for?
I can't see Man City keeping a clean sheet. So I think Aston Villa will score. But they're just crazy going forward at the moment. And when they only score 2-1 week, you think... Next week, how many are they going to score? So I'm going to say 6-1 Man City.
I'm going for a very similar scoreline, very similar thought process. Don't think City will keep a clean sheet, but they will score plenty. I'm going to go Manchester City 5, Aston Villa 1. I think people might say, oh, but if Aston Villa kind of contain them for 30, 40, 50 minutes, they might grow in confidence, but I can't see Villa not conceding quite a few. Then we only have 3 3 o'clock kickoffs tomorrow, actually. Brighton against Everton, we were just talking about...
We didn't hear what Charlie's score was, though.
Oh, yeah, we did. Manchester City 3, Villa 0.
Oh, sure, sorry.
So, Brighton versus Everton. Andy Naylor, we just heard from him, the Brighton reporter for The Athletic. Charlie has gone Brighton 1, Everton 2. Considering Everton's away form, a bit strange. What have you gone for?
I have that as well.
Oh, my goodness. What is going on? You agree with many things.
I just think they're going to kick on after...
What, even under a rubbish manager like Marco Silva?
Yeah, I mean, if they beat West Ham, then surely they can beat Brighton.
Yeah, but that's such a typical like West Ham thing to do. People are like, oh, West Ham could get something from that game, and then they bottle it, as they usually do. I'm going Brighton 2, Everton 0. Absolutely no doubt about that. Everton's away form is shambolic. Brighton looking for... and as Andy said, they perhaps did deserve something more from the game last week against Villa, but going down to 10 men really hampered them. To another 3 o'clock kickoff at Vicarage Road. Watford still looking for their first win. They host Bournemouth. I've gone Watford 1, Bournemouth 1. I think it will be a draw. Charlie has gone Watford 2, Bournemouth 1. So he says Watford are going to get their first win of the Premier League season. Laurie, what's your prediction?
I think it might be 0-0.
0-0. That would be what a great game. They drew 0-0 against Sheffield United, didn't they, a few weeks ago? Pretty dire. Last match on Match of the Day. No surprise there. Any reason you don't think Bournemouth, who score quite a few goals, that they might not?
I think if Bournemouth are at home, I would probably go for a 2 or 3 nil win. But I can just see it just being a horrible game of football.
Watford might play another back five like they did against Sheffield United. Bournemouth did keep their first clean sheet last weekend in that 0-0 draw against Norwich. And that was a game no one, I don't think, would have predicted. Final 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, West Ham versus Sheffield United. Mr. Hawkins has gone with a draw. West Ham 1, Sheffield United 1. What have you gone for, Laurie?
I mean, they're at home. I think they have enough. I know people have been impressed with Sheffield United. I still think they'll be in and around the relegation zone by the end of the season. I think West Ham are going to win 3-0.
3-0. I've gone West Ham 3, Sheffield United 1. Final game on Saturday, and we've got 4 on the Sunday. Burnley take on Chelsea at Turf Moor. It's a 5:30 kickoff, looking like a really good game. I've gone Burnley 1, Chelsea 0. I think I don't see Chelsea picking up anything in this away game. I know they played well away in the week against Ajax, but I think at Turf Moor, it will be a typical kind of Sean Dyche, organised, well-disciplined performance, and I reckon it will be a set-piece goal. What are you going to go for, Laurie?
I don't think that's the case. I think Burnley are good at home, but I think Chelsea are really coming into their own now, and they've got options. Like, look at Pulisic and Batshuayi have now linked up a couple of times in different games, just get an assist and a winner. And I know people were talking about they're going to be one-dimensional, they're not going to have enough players this season. I think they're showing more and more that they've got different ways to attack, different ways to win games, different ways to score goals. So I think Chelsea will win 2-0.
2-0. Mr. Hawkins has gone... Burnley 1, Chelsea 2. Then on to the Sunday games. We've got 4 of them, 1 at 2 and then the others at 4:30, but let's not get into that debate. Your beloved Newcastle, they host Wolves. Charlie has gone Newcastle 1, Wolves 1.
Oh, what is it with him today? That's exactly what I've got.
You haven't gone for a Newcastle win?
Well, I want to, but I just can't. Maybe I should.
You know it's not realistic that Newcastle are going to win. That's why you've gone.
It's also the fact that Wolves scored late goals against us in both fixtures last season.
They did. And in controversial circumstances, wasn't it, at St James's Park?
I think we probably will do well at keeping them quiet, and I think they'll score late again. I can just see it.
Are you going to stick with 1-1?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with 1-1.
I'm going to go with the result at St James's Park last season. Newcastle 1, Wolves 2. I just don't see Newcastle being able to score more than once. If Wolves can score multiple goals, there is no way Newcastle are going to score 2 or 3. Then on to the Emirates. Arsenal host Crystal Palace. On the face of it, I think this looks like a banana skin game, but I think at home, I think Arsenal will get through. No way they're keeping a clean sheet. I've gone 3-1 to Arsenal, which is exactly what Charlie Hawkins has gone. No surprise he's predicted an Arsenal win. Laurie, what are you going to go for?
I think they will keep a clean sheet, but I don't think they'll be impressive. I think it'll be 1-0.
1-0. There aren't many. Although they did beat Bournemouth 1-0, and that wasn't a game that you would have expected to be 1-0. It was a pretty dire game that Bournemouth could have got something from. Biggest game of the weekend, Anfield, 4:30 as well. Liverpool versus Tottenham. Charlie has gone Liverpool 2, Spurs 0. Laurie, what's your prediction?
Well, I know that you will have predicted that Liverpool are going to win. I think this is, rather than midweek, this is the moment that Spurs really turn their season around. 3-1 Tottenham away win.
That's why, Laurie, you're doing badly in the predictions and I am doing far better.
Can I just ask what you predicted when Liverpool played Man United?
I predicted we'd win 3-0.
And what was the score?
But we had... Let me put this into a bit of perspective.
Man United, you didn't manage to beat.
Let me put it into...
Newcastle beat Man United.
I mean, when you put it like that, but then we'd won 8 straight games to start the season before that. So, there you go. Liverpool 3, Tottenham 1 is what the score is going to be.
Other way around.
4:30 kick-off, final game of the weekend. Norwich against Manchester United. I can see from Charlie's prediction, he's gone very different to what I have done. So he's gone Norwich 1, Manchester United 3. I've gone Norwich 2, Manchester United 1. I think this is a game that at Carrow Road, United will slip up in and not pick up anything. What are you going to go for, Laurie?
No, I think Man United will win. I don't think they're a very good team, but I think Norwich overachieved at the start of the season. And I think they are going to struggle to be consistent this season. So
prediction?
I think 2-0 away Man United win.
Do you think Norwich will go down?
I think they'll be in the bottom 5.
Bit of a cop out answer that.
Yeah, I do think they'll
bottom
go down.
Bottom 3?
Yeah, I think they'll go down.
And did, just one final one, did they make a mistake by spending so little money?
Yes, I think so. But that centre, is it Amadou they bought? Looks good.
Only on loan though. So.
But yeah, I mean, look, they can't rely on Pukki to keep them up, can they? And I know they've got a lot of good young players and, you know, Max Ahrens and Todd Cantwell look really good, but I don't think they've got enough.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. That's Carrow Road, Norwich against Manchester United. If you want to share your views on the predictions, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number.
This is Love Sport.